This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. The school year is over for Cincinnati Public Schools, but in some ways, the district's work has just begun. CPS is working to close a multi-million dollar budget gap and will need to hire a permanent superintendent to replace Ironetta Wright, who resigned last month. Today, we're going to talk with the district's new interim leaders about the work ahead. And later in the program, we'll talk with two school board members about the search for the next superintendent. Joining me now are Cincinnati Public Schools Interim Superintendent Shauna Murphy. Welcome, Superintendent Murphy.
Thank you, Lucy. Glad to be here.
We're glad to have you. And CPS Interim Deputy Superintendent Alicia Smith. Thanks for being here, Deputy Superintendent Smith.
Thank you, Lucy. It's an honor.
Cincinnati Public Schools is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. I want to start by having each of you tell us just a bit about yourselves and your long careers with the districts. I know you all have done so much, this could fill the whole segment, but we're going to give the Cliff Notes version. I'll start with you, Superintendent Murphy.
Sure, Cliff Notes that go back to 1999, yes. Reader's Digest version, I really started in the district as a substitute teacher. I served as an English teacher and assistant principal for high school at the School for Creative and Performing Arts. Had an opportunity to serve in an elementary principal position at both Hyde Park Elementary School and Quemets Heights Elementary School before going to Woodward Career Technical High School. Served as an assistant superintendent for a few years, chief of student, family, and community engagement, and now as the interim superintendent.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot.
Okay. and same here. I started as a teacher right out of college, right, from Central State, and then became an assistant principal at Seller Park, and from Seller Park became the principal of Whittier. That became Reese Price. And then we went to Rothenburg and became a principal coach. And then I was afforded an opportunity with UVA and went to Arkansas and did some work as a deputy superintendent and a chief of school improvement there. But so happy to be back at home. So over 20-something years before I left. So Shauna has it down to a science. I need to figure out. I know it's over 30. I don't know. We're about the same age. We're rounding to another era almost. And so, but I'm so excited to be back and be on this team with Superintendent Murphy.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, I mentioned, now we'll get to the nitty-gritty of what we're here to talk about. I mentioned that there's this budget gap that you all are still working to close. How much does CPS still need to cut from the budget to balance it?
So as of last night, I reported at our board meeting a little over $9 million. Mm-hmm. And a week or so ago, we started at $26 million. And we're going to get there. We're going to get there.
Yeah. A lot of, so you've already made significant cuts and found significant savings and to reduce that shortfall.
Yeah. Alicia and I knew on day one, we had a very difficult task ahead of us. But first thing in the morning, we rolled up our sleeves, got with the union heads, got with the treasurer, assistant treasurer, and just went to work.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. The school district has known this federal funding was temporary, this ESSER funding that is responsible for a big portion of this gap. And the district's treasurer, I know, has been warning about this ESSER cliff. Why are the cuts kind of coming down to the wire like this?
I think part of it was that we were looking, hoping, trying to find funding, different places, trying to move money around, use some of our title funds. And it just got down to the wire that couldn't happen. And that we just really realized, like Superintendent Murphy said, we sat down and once we were assigned, the next day was all about the budget. And so we knew that once we started digging in, some of those things just were not possible. And that we just really had to make some really hard decisions so that we can move forward and do what's best for the kids in the district. So that's how it got to the place that we are now. There was hope that we could maybe Title II, maybe Title I, maybe Title VI, but there was not enough of that to close that gap. So that's how it got to this space that we're in now.
Yeah. And I imagine that money is being used for other things.
Absolutely.
Too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Explain the cuts the board voted to make last week in terms of personnel and how those recommended cuts were determined.
Some were a little more easy than others. So in some cases, there were positions that we had just not filled throughout the school year. So we started there. In some cases, there were contracts that we knew we weren't going to use for fiscal year 25. So that was maybe the second thing. And then really, we still had a long way to go. And then there had to be some more challenging conversations to have. So, for example, even with the ESSER funds, you know, before the pandemic, we didn't necessarily have nurses in every schoolhouse. And this is part of what makes it so challenging. Once you have that full-time nursing service for your child, you don't want your child to have to let that go. And we and the board certainly understand how challenging that is. So those millions of dollars, where do they go? Mm-hmm. And so just conversations about, all right, this is the maximum we would like to have, say 65, one for every school. What do organizations have the ability to fulfill? Let's take a look at those dollars and see if there can be some adjustments made there. We also had things like school health assistants at one point. But when the pandemic came, we went to full-time nursing. So now we're looking at, because we want to continue to provide quality services, maybe we need to go back and review what it was like to have those school health assistants. Mm.
Well, and if I'm remembering correctly, one of the cuts that had to be made, it was an assistant principal position. Was it about a dozen positions? Talk to us a little bit about what those positions were and what that cut means for schools.
So prior to 2 years ago, there was a number that the board has always decided on that we would have for our assistant principals, and it was about 500. And you got an assistant principal only at 500.
Well, 500 students?
Yes, mm-hmm. 500 students. And then it was reduced to 350. So that added quite a few assistant principals to us. So when we look at being in a budget cut, looking at this was a thing that an opportunity that we had, again, with funding that was going to go away, 500 was the actual number that we had. So anyone that fell below that number, that's where you saw those assistant principals were released. But that's going back to what we had normally done. Again, going back to what Superintendent, once you have something, nobody wants to go back. But I can remember, and I know she can, being a principal at an elementary school and having 500 kids and not having an assistant principal, having 450 kids and not having an assistant principal. You had your paraprofessionals. You created a team that was able to get that work done. So the principals will go back to creating that team that they've had before, and they will continue to do great work for kids. But again, that number was changed a few years ago. So we just really went back to what we had, again, what we had prior to the pandemic.
I see. So those positions were cut based on enrollment at the schools,
yes.
Not based on the
yes.
title of the position
yes.
or what they were doing or
exactly.
that sort of thing.
No, but the good news is we are finding enough positions that most of those people will be able to go into a different vacancy at that same level. And then if there's a situation where that's not going to work out, we do have hundreds of teaching vacancies that assistant principals or other administrators could go into to be supportive of the district and help the district out. And then this also points to the next steps for both Alicia and I. We really need to look at our smaller schools and come up with a plan to present to the board of how we can strengthen services to those schools.
Mm. What about the EL manager position that was eliminated? I guess I know there was a lot of talk about that. How can the district continue to educate English language learners without someone in that role? And I'm wondering, will more of that work fall on classroom teachers to try to manage?
That was definitely one of the tough decisions. It's all tough. Because in these positions, we're talking about people, and we're talking about people who have served our school district and our children. Just a reminder, we also have hundreds of teachers who are working with individual students. This is an administrative position that we did feel we could absorb those responsibilities. This was not direct teaching services to children. This was not direct advocacy to families in order for them to be well and to be whole and to them to be able to provide a service to those kids. But we understand some people did get very, very confused, and the board had lots of questions for us about that position in particular. So we came up with the idea that we would reimagine that work so that there is a little bit more direct services provided coming out of that position. The board felt so highly of it, they want us to elevate the work so that it does expand in order to serve more students and more families. So that is another plan that Dr. Smith and I will be working on.
And we really do want to ensure that no services will be taken away from kids. Like, it may look a little different, but they're not going to miss any opportunities for our ESL students to get what they need. They're a valuable part of our community. They're a large part of our community. And so we value them. We're going to make sure that they, you know, get everything that they need. So we had to straighten that out because people are like, oh, they're going to. No, we're not. We would never.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's a growing part of the school district's enrollment, isn't it?
It is. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a growing part of the school district in all areas. Mm-hmm. And it definitely provides us an opportunity to revisit what we have been doing and to talk with the families and the community about what's needed today so that we can push our kids even more.
We're talking with the interim leaders of Cincinnati Public Schools about the challenges the school district is facing. You know, we talked about just a few minutes ago, the district still has millions of dollars of cuts that need to be made. It's between 9 and 10 million, if I'm remembering that correctly. What are you all prioritizing as you develop recommendations for the board?
So last night we shared with the Board of Education that we are going to go back and review contracts. We specifically called out contracts under $200,000, but I believe we're going to go a little bit deeper and look at all of those contracts. When we initially reviewed the vacant positions, those vacancies went from a particular span of time. So now we're going to go back and see, is there a different timeline that we can look at? There was a position vacant in October, and now it's June. It's still vacant. The chances of us being able to fill that, we want to look at that and hope to be able to recoup some dollars there. And then the treasurer also mentioned looking at how we present services.
That can be a tough one.
That can be really tough.
Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about contracts, that's personnel, right? I mean, contracts
services,
for people.
It could be professional development. It could be some type of service that's being provided. I don't want to mention any specific ones.
Oh, sure. I'm not trying to trick you. Yeah.
No. But yes, it's usually not a personnel issue.
Okay. It's a contracted service of some sort.
Okay. And when you're talking about the way services are presented, I'm not trying to push you to say, like, give us the scoop on what the recommendations might be, but can you explain a little bit more about what that means for people who are listening and might not understand, you know, what you're talking about there?
Sure. So I'll just be real transparent. For example, and this is just a very high level example, but we have a contract with Activities Beyond the Classroom. And they provide services in particular around our student athletes. And I'm using this as an example because I know it really, really well. Mm-hmm. And so some of them might be the huddle service. And huddle is usually used for football games where kids can hone in on some of the plays that they've been a part of and share those with college recruiters, just for example. Well, we may need to scale back on the dollars that we spend on the huddle services. It is really great to have. It is really nice to have. But we need to look at, is it essential to have school?
I see. Okay, that helps. That's very helpful.
So that would
love Activities Beyond the Classroom.
Yes, we do. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm not trying to scare anybody with this, but yeah, that helps explain kind of what you're talking about.
And as she said, the question is going to be about essential. Mm-hmm. Like, can it look another way? Can it be placed somewhere else? But is it essential? Because our goal is to continue to do what's best for the district and the kids. And so if it's something that we would love to have, but we can really navigate the kids and do still great work without it, then it'll be on the table.
Yeah. Well, we are going to continue our conversation in just a moment. And later in the program, we'll talk with two school board members about the search for a new superintendent. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Cincinnati Public Schools and the district's budget challenges. My guests are Cincinnati Public Schools Interim Superintendent Shauna Murphy and CPS Interim Deputy Superintendent Alicia Smith. We were just talking about the district's budget, some of the different things that you're having to look at cutting. Where does state funding come in? Do you feel like the district gets enough state funding to support, you know, what your students need?
That's a fantastic question, Lucy. I'll start, and Dr. Smith, I'm sure, will chime in. But I will tell you, my very first education classes had to be the late 80s, very early 90s, and state funding in Ohio for education was unconstitutional then. It is still unconstitutional. Some of the things that people don't know about is the money the public system pays out for private and parochial and charter schools, whether it is transportation, whether it is providing services, personnel, and others in their schools. It is really, really challenging, but that does have to be taken into consideration. And when Treasurer Wagner provides us with our target, there are certain line items we take right off the top, because we know we can't touch those things. It's very challenging.
And we would love for the listeners to advocate for us, because we're trying to educate kids on a large scale, you know, and to meet the needs of all of our kids. It needs to be funded correctly. Like, we shouldn't be stressed about how we're going to make sure that our young people get a quality education. That's their God-given right, and we're trying to do it, and the state should see that lens of the work and really help us with that a little more than what they're doing.
Where does that leave you all in terms of, you know, when you know some of this funding is going to these charter schools, to private schools, as you mentioned? There are some things you get that budget and you think, slice that right off the top. Where does that leave you all in a situation like this?
I think our target was $690 million. And so we work with what we work with. But, you know, in Cincinnati Public Schools, I'm just going to say one of the things I'm super proud of is our community learning center model.
Yes.
And in that model, our board has said all of our schools are community learning centers. There is policy that they have written around that, and there are procedures that we must follow. And what I mean by this is each school has a resource coordinator, and those resource coordinators work really, really hard with partners to bring services, to bring goods, to bring supplies into our schoolhouses. There is a plethora of partners I could list, but just know that we are so, so grateful for each and every one of them, whether it is school uniforms or after school programming or snacks or extracurricular activities that they bring into the school. So they definitely help us to tie loose ends.
And we've both been principals of community learning centers, and they are some of the most amazing opportunities for us. I mean, she's right. Just the things that the community does for us to kind of close in some of those gaps that are there that our young people need. And it does look different at each school based on what they need. And that's the lovely part about the community learning center model.
Yeah. The district is growing, as I understand it. Where is that growth coming from? And does that mean the district will get more money from the state as a result of that growth in enrollment?
Yes, it does. And I think the growing is coming out of, you know, we've had some increases in our student achievement, just being visible in the community. I think our parent voice is been essential to that. And now our parent academy, just those things that are getting parents to know who we are and see who we are. And I think those are like the really critical things. And I think also seeing the board in a space where we're doing what we can to make sure that Cincinnati Public Schools is the best place to be. And I think our parents are watching that. I believe in word of mouth. I think that's essential. And yes, you get more money when you have more kids. So that per pupil budget is existent.
And I also want to say, really, a few years ago, our Board of Education and the folks at Preschool Promise, they joined together to really have a tax levy that would appeal to the people. And some of our largest growth as a result of that is coming with preschool, which is fantastic news for us, because then they become our kindergartners and our first graders. And so we're grateful for the attention that preschool and all the work that Vera and our preschool team are doing, and the partnership with the Preschool Promise team.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you working to have these budget decisions coming back to, you know, you still have between $9 and $10 million you got to cut to have a balanced budget? Are you working to have these decisions made by the end of this month?
That would be my goal. Mm-hmm. Now we have to work, you know, with the treasurer, and we have to dig even harder, because I really, my heart says we need to get this done now, as opposed to people going into the rest of June and July and coming back in August, and we're entering in, we have this 90-day appropriation, and it's not done. It's still hanging over us. And then guess what, Lucy? A month later, we have to start all over again.
Right.
So I would really like to get this done as soon as possible.
Well, and if you do that 90-day appropriation, as I understand it, we were talking with our education reporter, Zach Carrion, about that on Friday. Doesn't that just kind of kick the can down the road and make it worse next year if you delay these cuts?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We need to balance now.
Yeah, we just...
We need to take care of what we need to take care of now. We need to deal with this now so that we don't have that pressure on our staff. We don't have that pressure on our students. Will they not have this activity? Will this teacher not be here? The other good thing from a principal lens trying to run a school is, let me get my master schedule intact right now, as opposed to asking me to make changes in August, September, or October. Mm. Once a child comes to school and they meet their first grade teacher, the families, they want that first grade teacher. So we'd like to get it done now.
Yeah.
We really want to get it done now.
Yeah.
That was the first thing that she and I talked about. Like, let's get in here and try to get this thing done now. And we're working, you know, collaboratively with the teams and with the treasurer. But we really do, because it'll settle things for us as well. Mm-hmm. Right. People will feel settled as we begin to walk into the new school year.
Yeah. What kinds of recommendations are you all hearing from teachers, other staff, and parents about the cuts they think should be made or that they really don't want to see made?
I won't necessarily say cuts, but just some suggestions. Can we do technology this way? Just some really solid suggestions have been coming our way. There were two this morning. Is there a grant maybe for the Yonder pouches, mm-hmm. if we're going to deliver those to school, as opposed to digging into our general fund budget to take care of some things?
Yeah, and those are those pouches that kids put their cell phones in.
Exactly. So, but taking the time to search for and write a grant right now, when, you know, we're talking about wanting to get this done within the next 2 weeks, mm-hmm. if not even sooner, but something to look at moving forward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be lightning speed for a grant, I guess. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there any way to close this gap without cutting more staff?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Still doing those, crunching the numbers.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any way to close the gap without affecting student transportation? I mean, I know that was a suggestion that came up earlier with the previous superintendent.
The board, in my opinion, has been very clear about their non-negotiables. We don't right now have a plan to bring back anything surrounding transportation, for example. But I will say this, we will not close this budget gap by eliminating tissues or crayons or paper. It is a lot to get to $9-10 million.
Yeah, it's a lot bigger than that.
Yes,
it is.
Yeah. So what's next with this, and how can parents and staff make their voices heard during this whole process?
I think they've been doing a really good job of that. They come to our board meetings. They email us. we get phone calls. And I also, like I said before, we have an excellent, what is LaRonda's
title? She's our parent champion.
Parent champion. Mm-hmm. Yes. Our parent champion is doing a great job of making sure, like, the schools have active PTOs where parents can speak up, and they have voice in the things. They have all kind of professional development and meetings with her. And I think that's a way for them to reach out and say to them, hey, I have some suggestions. But most of the time, honestly, we answer emails, we answer phone calls, and parents that really want to speak, they show up at the board meeting and many to share their concerns and what they feel passionate about. And we listen and we return phone calls and we take notes so that they know they do matter to us. Their voice matters. We value them and how they feel. And sometimes we have to just tell them the why. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people don't know the why. And when you explain, as she just said, this can't be crammed. Paper, tissue, it can't be. But we have to get to a space, and we want them to see our hearts in this and know that we're going to do what's best for your kids in this, and we're not taking it lightly.
Yeah.
I also just want to be really hopeful about this. And there is this futuristic phase that the board would like Alicia and I to go into that we have been digging into in terms of how we do school differently. So there are a lot of pieces that we can look at, but it would have to move pretty quickly, and people would need to be very cooperative in order to get this done. And I'm so grateful that we have had a ton of cooperation so far. And I think being transparent about where we are and what we're dealing with, and being collaborative, working with all of our union leaders to do this work, means that they will trust us in those tough, challenging decisions. And they've been at the table and have agreed with us about some things. And there have been some things we've disagreed with, but we move along.
Yeah. We're already a little bit over time, but yep. I just want to ask you very briefly, if you could each tell me, what are your goals for the districts? What are your hopes? What makes you excited about this work ahead? We've been talking about all the tough stuff, but what makes you excited about this work?
I'm here for kids. I am here for kids. Last night, we had a presentation from Darlene Kamine, who's the executive director of the Community Learning Center Institute. She is what I call the pioneer of Community Learning Center, and we are opening a health clinic at Roberts School. And when I think about what that means to kids with a toothache, to kids who just have a tummy ache, to kids who aren't really seeing the board, the chalkboard, whatever it's called these days, as they should, the impact, the difference this will make on them. I am so interested in doing that work for kids.
Yeah.
I think what makes me most excited is the collaboration that we have, and that we are really thinking about what's going to be next for our young people from beginning to end. Even though we're in the middle of a budget cut or budget choices, budget suggestions, right? There is so much hope. And there, because guess what? Anytime you're dealing with young people, you have to have hope. You have to believe that they can. And I believe the things that we're doing and the conversations we're having are presenting a place where we can say, we may not be able to do this, but we can do this. And it's still going to yield the same great results for our young people. And as you said, here for kids. Yeah. We're here to make sure they get what they need.
Well, I have been talking with Cincinnati Public Schools Interim Superintendent Shauna Murphy and CPS Interim Deputy Superintendent Alicia Smith. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you both for your time today.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you, Lucy.
Up next, we'll hear from two CPS board members about the search for a new superintendent. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. The resignation of former Superintendent Ironetta Wright from Cincinnati Public Schools added a new challenge for the district's Board of Education. Now, on top of having to cut millions of dollars from the district's budget this summer, the school board also must begin the search for a permanent leader. Joining me now to talk about those challenges and how the board plans to move forward are Cincinnati Public Schools Board of Education President Eve Bolton. Welcome back, Board President Bolton.
Great, thanks. I really enjoy being here.
Well, thanks for being here. And CPS Board of Education member Ben Lindy. Thanks for being here, Board Member Lindy.
Thank you very much.
Cincinnati Public Schools is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. So we just heard the district's interim superintendent and interim deputy superintendent talk about the district's budget gap. I'll start with you, Board President Bolton. How concerned are you about this?
Oh, very concerned. We've been in a state of crisis, frankly, for a number of months, facing that crisis and trying to not only bridge the gap financially that we knew very well was going to hit us, but also trying to envision a budget for the coming school year that moves us along and keeps us moving in a progressive way.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Board Member Lindy?
Yeah, I think our district has a number of important challenges facing us today. I certainly think the budget is one of them. I also think the question you opened with about what's the future look like and how does this board go about finding a next leader and what are our priorities? I think there are a number of big questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a question that I asked our previous guests, but you know, the school district knew this federal funding was temporary, this ESSER funding, and the district's treasurer has been warning about this ESSER cliff. Why are these cuts coming down to the wire?
I think largely because we spent a number of months not only avoiding, but also delaying decisions that needed to be made and were offered options that were not attractive to the board or fit within the vision moving forward. So I think it was these are big, big decisions that take much time, but more particularly have to be made within a parameter of priorities.
Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I do see it a little bit differently. I think the previous administration did a really nice job of starting early. In October, this was almost 9 months before the budget was due. And to the treasurer's credit and the former superintendent's credit, they had been talking about this upcoming cliff for years. I think that I really appreciate the way the interim superintendent put it. I mean, the truth is these are valuable services we've been able to provide with federal dollars. It's hard to say goodbye. I haven't quite been on the board as long as my colleague, President Bolton, but in, at least in the years I've been on the board, our budget is always coming down to the end, and cuts are hard.
Okay. What about state funding? What role do you feel like state funding, what role, if any, is that playing in this? Is the district getting enough money from the state? Should the district be getting more?
Well, that's a good question. Compared to our property tax income, which is coming from our local folks, the next largest amount of money that we get is actually through the state foundation funding. And indeed, we wish that there was more. Unfortunately, CPS is classified, believe it or not, even with our high poverty, as a wealthy district. It's classified just as Wyoming City Schools are because of the value of the property. So there are things within the state foundation that we would like to change. For example, we're not funded or an enrollment is not determined or added to because of our preschool, thousands of kids. There's other things that we'd like to not have to be spending money on, whether it's on some of the charter or parochial or private school functions that we have to also perform. But they're all Cincinnati kids, so to speak, so we understand that. But it's a critical part of the budget. And we've actually done fairly well, all things considered, but not well enough to really reduce some of the pressure on our local taxpayers.
Mm-hmm. Board Member Lindy, I know that you were a big supporter of Ironetta Wright, the former superintendent. Where do you think things went wrong with her tenure? There was such excitement around her hiring. Her resignation struck many people as very sudden. Where do you think things went wrong?
I think it's a great question. It's one I'm still trying to figure out myself, and I wish she were still here. I mean, truthfully, I think she's one of the most talented leaders we've had in a long time. I think when you look at the outcomes for students and for families in Cincinnati Public Schools, there's just no question things are getting better. There was a study in the New York Times earlier this year that showed we had the second highest improving math scores of any of the big urban 44 school districts in the country. So to come back from all the challenges of COVID and show such strong results for children and for families, you know, I think this district was moving in a good direction.
What do you think, Board President Bolton? Where do you think things went wrong for the former superintendent?
Well, I would suggest, too, that she was selected by a 7-0 vote. So it was a united board that selected her. And it was a united board that granted virtually every wish she made regarding personnel and funding. And I think that's important. So there was no question about what was given. I think what went off the rails, in part, was I think that the superintendent and maybe some folks within the district thought in terms of thinking about CPS as a turnaround district rather than a district that needed to accelerate and move and progress in a more rapid pace. And I think that was part of it. I think also the inability with a unitary concept of the executive branch that I think she had that we didn't discover till much later, it did not fit within the infrastructure of decision-making that's been built here for 50 years, whether it's at the school level or the district level, whether it's among labor or management, around the community and the board. So I think that was a part of a culture that did not fit within the particular leadership structure that existed. Mm-hmm. But she was great, gifted, and good. And it was abrupt, and we are now dealing with finding a way to move forward, as is she, who's, I think, even started a new company.
Oh. I know board member Lindy talked about how far in advance the former superintendent brought the budget before the board started working on that. How would you characterize the way she handled the budget?
Badly, or we wouldn't have been in the situation that we were in. And part of it was, again, the lack of collaboration, which is part of the culture. But the other piece was that we kept getting the same offerings as to vote on. So if you had an opportunity of A through E, we kept seeing the same A, the same E, and we kept seeing it not only at the same time, but also even after the board had expressed this is not within our priority or vision that the community has expressed with our new strategic plan.
What do you think about that, board member Lindy?
Yeah, I think if, just to go back for a second to the question of whether CPS is a turnaround district, I think that's a really important question. And I would characterize it slightly differently. I'm an alum from CPS. I'm a CPS dad. You know, I was a former public school teacher in North Carolina. I love CPS, and I'm glad we're here. But in far too many schools, fewer than half of the children can do math and read on grade level. And it is our job as a school board to change that. So I don't particularly mind whether one calls it a turnaround or a fight for educational excellence and equity, but whatever you call it, you know, job one, I think, is improving outcomes for families and for students. It's one of the reasons I'm so proud of the progress we've seen. And it's not just those math scores. I mean, reading scores are up, chronic absenteeism is down, our buses are running on time. Student satisfaction, parent satisfaction, staff satisfaction, all these numbers are moving in the right direction. And the budget's challenging. You know, I do think it's important to give the administration the chance to align a budget with our strategy, and I think that's what she was trying to do.
If I'm remembering correctly, one of the recommendations that former Superintendent Wright had brought forward was school consolidation. Do you think that could be back on the table?
I think this is a terrible time to consolidate schools. I really do. I mean, I think that you know, the we had a committee who worked on this for a long time. They put a lot of effort into it, but I think, you know, with even the earliest mentions of a possibility of school consolidation, we saw hundreds of parents show up for a meeting. I think school consolidation is a choice of last resort from my perspective. It's very, very hard to do well, and I just think we have other issues we should figure out first.
Hmm. What do you think, Board President Bolton?
Oh, absolutely. We cannot continue to sustain schools that are so small that they cannot offer the full programming that all of our kids deserve. Because if you must have a certain critical mass in order to have the art, the music, the extra help, the opportunity of the field trips, or enough people that are helping with the tutoring. So we're going to do more. We're going to do school consolidation. In Columbus, they're closing 30 schools. We're not closing any schools. But what we are is looking at how we can consolidate so that all of our kids have the kind of programming that they deserve. So I think that's going to be part of the vision for the future. I think also offering more choices to folks and having greater access. Something as simple as our wonderful Zoo Academy probably needs to be an offering that all of our young people have an opportunity rather than having that only be a niche within one school. So there's great opportunity to widen the choice, widen the equity, and also widen the access.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with two members of Cincinnati Public Schools Board of Education about the challenges the district is facing. Board President Bolton, do you think the circumstances around former Superintendent Wright's resignation will make it more difficult to identify and hire a permanent superintendent?
I think her length of term will make it more difficult. I think, too, with the preoccupation that we've all had about are we too parochial to have some outsider or what have you, I think that makes it more difficult. What doesn't make it more difficult is indeed having a district that is in good financial situation with positive feelings between labor and management, a community that is embracing the current leadership and believing in the board, and a board with some credibility, will make it easier for us to reach beyond wherever we want to reach for that search. Now, the search, as we kind of determined last night, won't be starting until perhaps December of this year. We have negotiations with all six labor unions starting in the fall. We also have to be able to not only get through summer school and this year of school, but indeed we have to be able to implement the budget that we're ready to design. So the search probably starts somewhere at the end of December. And that's when you also want to do the search, because people will not be leaving their district. And we have, as some of you know, we have 20 people within our district that are licensed to be superintendent as well. So we have a great range of talent, and we, I think, can attract talent if we get the district in good financial and cultural and intellectual shape. Hmm.
Board Member Lindy, I want to let you weigh in on that and also talk about how long is a reasonable term to expect from a superintendent? What do you think is reasonable for the board to expect from the next superintendent in terms of how long that person stays in the job?
Yeah, I really appreciate this question. It is going to be impossible, from my perspective, for us to attract the kind of superintendent that I hope we could attract, given the events of the last several weeks. We've now had four top leaders in 3 years. I think we had several months of the board really being unwilling to let the superintendent do her job. And I think it will just be very hard for us to recruit the nation's top leaders to come lead a school district here. I don't think it has to stay that way. You know, I do think there are things we could do to show that we're moving in a positive direction. But I'm just very concerned that, you know, after the votes of no confidence from the unions were important, and I think there's important feedback there for the district and the superintendent to listen to. And there were some concerns about them. But the fact that, you know, we weren't willing to, you know, take a middle path here and, like, let's work with a third-party mediator to lead through this together, I just think superintendent candidates will see that, and they will become less interested.
Do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I think it's very likely that we would be unable to ever attract anybody that does not seem to understand the value of collaboration between labor and management and embracing the community's vision of the school. We won't attract anybody that doesn't believe in that sort of thing. I think, too, this is not something that happened in the last 6 weeks. The first indications of all of these problems started within 6 months. And our budget and our personnel complement is proof that the new superintendent that we hired, and I was one of the top three supporters for sure, it demonstrates that the superintendent had the full range. I've been on the board 17 years. I have never seen any superintendent have the authority that this superintendent had. I would also suggest that, yes, if you look post-COVID, we've had a lot of turnover. But those of us who have been around a long time can go back. We can go back to Mrs. Blackwell, to Mrs. Ronan, to Ms. Mitchell, and then we had an interim, and then we had a new one. So this idea that we're somehow unstable is an incorrect characterization. And the lifetime of an urban superintendent is about 3.5 years.
Okay, that's the average kind mm-hmm. of a tenure. Of,
it's the roughest job in America. Hmm.
It is a tough job, that's for sure. You know, the district is facing these budget problems we've talked about. I understand the district needs to continue to pay the former superintendent, possibly a search firm if you decide to do that in December, and potentially raises for the two interim leaders that the board appointed. I don't know if you're looking at that. Are you worried about the financial ramifications of having to find a new superintendent?
Oh, absolutely. And I think rather than what you cited, but all that you cited is correct, does represent additional money. The real issue is, are you competitive financially with the salary and the benefits program? It's basically, more than $500,000, basically, if you put all the benefits and the compensation and whatever together. And to be competitive in the nation, especially among the urban school districts, you're going to have to do that. So that's where our big focus would be.
Mm-hmm. Board Member Lindy, you mentioned the number of superintendents and top leaders that CPS has had in a short amount of time. How much say do you think the district's unions should have in the next selection process of a new superintendent? I mean, it's clearly important that the superintendent work well with employees and teachers and staff. You know, Board President Bolton just talked about that, but how much say do you think they should have in the process?
I think it's vital. I mean, I don't think we disagree about that at all. I think you know, in a good search, you want different stakeholder groups to have a chance to share on the front end what they care about and a chance to review your finalists. I think that's what we did in our last one. I would just add that, you know, Superintendent Wright was the first choice of the, at least the teachers union in the last election. And so I think we need to get to the root cause of, you know, why is it that when we have a leader who is generating this kind of progress, the increase in math scores, the reading, the chronic absenteeism going down, parent satisfaction up, staff satisfaction up, we can still wind up with this kind of a challenge. And I think that's job one for us.
What are the qualities you think you'll be looking for in a new superintendent? I know you said that search won't start until December, but do you already have in mind what you'll be looking for?
No, because we have to convene the community to help us determine that. Mm-hmm. So I know personally, as one board member, I would suggest somebody that embraces the values and the vision of the community, someone that is collaborative in nature, somebody that is transparent, that it doesn't take four questions on the same topic to get to the answer, and somebody that's devoted to not only public schools, but also public school children and their families and their taxpayers.
Do you have thoughts on that? What qualities you want to see in the next superintendent?
I mean, it's a great question, and for me, the most important issue is can our next leader help improve measurable outcomes for students and for families? And I'm just speaking for myself. I'd want to see somebody who has a record of doing that in other places. You know, if we're as a board prioritizing anything other than, you know, are we getting meaningful measure results for children and for families? You know, I don't know what we're doing.
What do you see as the biggest challenges facing the district? We've talked about the budget. That is a challenge, of course, but it has to be solved pretty quickly. When you look ahead, what do you think are the biggest challenges facing the district?
We are in the process after about 18, almost 20 months, if you will, of work in redesigning, re-envisioning the district itself, both from a programmatic as well as a facilities as well as an engagement piece, because we are not sustainable. Our transportation is no longer sustainable. Having the small schools is too costly for kids not having programming. So the biggest challenge, and not really a problem because we're able to meet the challenge, is re-envisioning and making this almost 200-year-old school district, the oldest one this side of the Alleghenies, ready for the next 20 years. So sustainability and forecasting our future and designing it for our kids.
Yeah. What do you think, Board Member Lindy?
You know, I think the biggest challenge in Cincinnati is that too much turns on the zip code you're born into. You know, like every student in every family in every zip code should have access to an excellent public education. And it's just still true today that in too many of our schools, fewer than half of the kids can read and do math on grade level. Like, it is the job of this board to do something about that. There are all kinds of challenges in how we get there. We need a leader and we need a board that is going to put the needs of children and families first, no matter what.
Well, I've been talking with Cincinnati Public Schools Board of Education President Eve Bolton and CPS Board of Education member Ben Lindy. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Great. Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director today is Ella Rowan. If you miss our program live, you can subscribe to Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. And you will want to tune in tomorrow because you will hear the first episode of Backed Up, a brand new podcast from WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.